Hello, welcome to the Jan Arden Podcast and Show. What a goddamn show we have for you today. I don't need to give this woman an introduction, but I'm going to anyway because some of you people have not been out of the house since 2019. An award-winning comedian, yes she is, podcaster, author of six books, six New York Times bestsellers. Try doing that, you jealous people. She's hosted late night television. She's done everything from ayahuasca to downhill skiing while holding two dogs, a joint, a cocktail, while in a bikini, no less. She's vaccinated, often horny. She's coming to Vancouver, 29th of March, 30th of March, Queen Elizabeth Theater, Little Big Bitch Tour. I've seen it. Please welcome to the stage, Chelsea Handler.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. What a wonderful introduction.
It's nothing. I had to help writing it. I had these two people.
Oh, yes.
Listen, your birthday was epic, Chelsea. You were indeed skiing in Whistler with your dog in a backpack. How does it feel? You're on the dark side of 50.
I'm 49. Is that the dark side of 50?
Yes, that's the dark side of 50.
Fuck. Okay. So yes.
That's what they call it in Canada.
Oh, I didn't know. There's so many sayings in Canada that I haven't really caught on to. I'm so busy smoking joints and drinking cocktails and getting my dogs high that I can't even focus on the lexicon that you guys are using up here. It feels good to be 49. I mean, 50 is a big number. I'm not going to lie. You're like, wait, what? I remember my dad being 50 and being like, get out of my way. You're old. I don't want to, you know, don't associate with me. So yeah, I am 50. But you know what? I mean, I'm happy. I'm so happy. I'm so happy that I am not married and that I don't have some husband that annoys the living shit out of me. I'm happy that I get to have sex with random men in different countries and I don't feel any obligation towards them. I'm happy that I don't have any children of my own, even though I do have a lot of children in my life.
You do.
You know, I do. I actually do more than necessary. But I'm happy about that too. It's like I get to live all out. I get to live the best of all the worlds, right?
Like, do you feel like you have to apologize for being happy sometimes?
No.
I mean, I think a lot of times people that are happy, it's just like, oh, well, good for you. I'm so glad you're happy.
I think we need to talk about happiness a little bit more and like, you know, unadulterated joy a little bit more and actually finding out in life, especially for women, about what makes you happy and finding your passions and finding your joy and getting after it, you know, because not everybody has the luxury or feels like they have the luxury to do so. And you do. You have every right to create your own joy and find out what brings it up in you. Because when you are joyful, you spread it and you're giving it away to other people. And right there, that alone can never be selfish. So anyone who thinks like, you know, living a life like mine being selfish, it's like, I get to spread this joy with so many people. So there's nothing selfish about that.
No, you do bring a lot of joy. I've seen your last two stand-up shows and they were so different from each other in every way, shape, or form. It wasn't like you came in and did like anything that was even similar from the show that I saw 18 months ago. I don't even know how you find the time to do all the shit that you do, but writing comedy, putting a routine together like that, just for people that don't have a clue, where does that even start? So you're out on the Big Little Bitch tour. It's a lot about your childhood, no spoiler alerts, but how do you put that together? Where does it start?
I always just take the funny stories that happen and I'm writing a new book. I'm doing my stand-up. There's a lot of overlap with those two things. So a lot of like, you know, like the stories I told about going to Kennebunkport to George W. Bush's compound. Like that's a true story. I was on three edibles and had to go deal with a former president who I have no political amiability with. Like we have nothing in common. And I had to drug myself to go there. And the story of me having to look at his artwork while I was on three edibles with him asking me to take my sunglasses off and me having to tell him, sir, Mr. President, I'm as high as a kite right now. And that's what I had to do to get here. Those stories in my life, like my brothers and sisters were on that trip with me to Maine. And those stories in my life, that is my life. It's pure ridiculousness. The situations I find myself in are just crazy. Like my brother is like, listen, he goes, every time we go away with Chelsea, some shit like this happens. And I take pride in that. Like I take pride in providing that kind of entertainment, never being narrow-minded enough to not experience something that you think you won't like, always being open-minded. And then, you know, my personality leads to a lot of embarrassing situations. And I like to take the piss out of myself. It's fun to self-deprecate and be self-deprecating. And a lot of the stories in this show, like the Andrew Cuomo story, the Bill Cosby story, the Woody Allen Fallon story. They're all true. So why not share them? You know what I mean? Like, everyone wants to know about that kind of stuff. And those people I don't have a ton of respect for. So I have no problem, you know, throwing them under the bus. So yeah, I like to share all of it because not everybody gets to experience all these things. And I think the reason why anyone is a fan of mine is because they know that I tell the truth. You know, I'm not lying about stuff. I don't make things up. I don't try to make myself look good. I just am living.
The thing that always strikes me in your shows is how quick you are with hecklers. This one guy in the Calgary show, he started off really early saying some shit to you. And you wound that poor fucking guy throughout the entire show. Can't remember what his name was, Rick or something. But it would be this click, click, click. And then Rick would get it. And I was just like, it was perfect. And it wasn't overkill because every time you went there and then people started hoping for it. But there's still a kindness to it and there's a grace to it. And I don't know how that's even possible, but there is. Because he knows, listen, you know why you bought a ticket to come here. You're sitting in the front row. You're never mind that. You're right in front of me. You're looking at my vagina, basically, from where he was sitting.
Those are top dollar seats.
They're top dollar seats, but you're so quick on your feet. Were you always like that as a kid? Was 10-year-old Chelsea like the kid that was just like, don't screw with me because I will flatten you with words?
Yeah, I have been very quick. I'm very quick, but, you know, not always to my advantage. Sometimes I fly off the handle, or historically I have been known to fly off the handle without thinking about what I'm saying. But when I'm on stage, that is my domain. And I've been doing it now for 20-something years, 25, I'm 49, to more than 25 years. So, you know, if you're not good at your job after 25 years, you should find another one. And I know how to handle hecklers because it's my show. People are there. They paid money to see me, not to hear him, Rick, talk to me. No one paid for that. So I am also protecting my audience. You know, it's not just about me looking good. It's like, you're not ruining the show for anybody that paid tickets to come see me. And that's how I feel.
And that's the truth. Do you think that the way you were raised, and you have talked a lot about your family over the years, do you think your parents and your siblings and the way you guys interacted and the way your parents were with you, that it kind of informed not only your personal life, Chelsea, but your professional life, like those beginnings of wanting to have some money in your life to not be held prisoner by other people's expectations. So that seed was planted early. Your parents have obviously played a big part in that, whether it's good or bad.
Well, they played a big part in neglecting me. So that was a big part. And it's not even really, you know, I mean, it is their fault because they should have probably used protection, but they had so many children and they were so tired and they were so inefficient at parenting. Incompetent would kind of be the right word, that I stepped in and parented myself. And my brothers and sisters had a big role in parenting me. And there was no loss of love in our family, but there was a loss of, like, you know, reliability, dependability, getting picked up on time from school, or, you know, my mom getting in touch with the other kids' mom's friends. My mom's like, I don't want to deal with those people. Like, I'd rather you didn't go to that party. I'm like, no, I need to go to that party. You need to act like a mother and, like, you know, step it up. Like, my parents were never on the level with the other parents. And that bothered me a great deal. And then I also, the dynamic between my mom and my dad was very obviously in his favor. And I knew from a very young age that I did not ever want to be reliant on another person, whether it be a man or a woman. Like, I was going to make my own way. I was going to have a luxurious life. I was going to have the most fun, and I was going to make a lot of money. I wanted independence. Like, when I was a baby, I was so pissed at being trapped in that body. Like, I just wanted to be a woman. I was like, what are these arms and legs? Like, I want my boobs. I wanted my own apartment when I was 7. Like, I asked if I could get my own place because I just wanted to separate from them. I felt like they were holding me back. So now when my brothers and sisters and I, who are all very close, look back or talk about it, it's like, now they know that I did know what I was. They just thought I was like this crazy. I was like, no, I told you guys from the very beginning, this is what it was going to be, and to follow my lead. If you want to live the good life, come with me and I will show you the way. And my brothers and sisters, some of them were like 15 years older than me. And they're like, oh my God, who is this like little lunatic? But now they realize that I knew what was up all along. And, you know, now they listen to me a lot better.
I can't imagine what your report cards were like in elementary, junior high. Chelsea's very good, but she just talks too much or whatever.
A lot of talking. I wanted to be funny. I wanted people to know I was funny because, like, the pretty part, because I was always blonde and cute, and sometimes I was cuter than others. But I didn't like that attention only. I wanted the attention for being smart and for being funny. Like, so it was so important for me to always, when I was in a new class, I was like, when's my moment? When's my moment? I'm going to make a joke. And I didn't care if the teachers liked me. I just wanted all of the students to know that I was like, I'm the funny one. And so I would figure out when I was going to say the funny thing, you know? I always had a kind of dominant personality. And it's worked well for me in careers. You know, romantic relationships is a little different because men think they want a woman like me, but then they are with a woman like me. And then they feel some, you know, many men can feel emasculated by that, which is a bummer, but also not my problem either. You know,
it's not
like it's not something that I need.
I was going to say, how does money and success affect your personal relationships? And I think that's such a cultural thing too, Chelsea, is that the roles somehow are still so defined in 2024, like she does this, he does that, or whatever the situation is. And plus, you're in a situation where you basically live in a glass bowl and everyone has an opinion about who you sleep with, who you have your relationships with, all of that stuff. I don't even know how you live your life setting that shit aside and not worrying about what people are interjecting on you. Because some of the comments that I've read over the last, like, 3-4 weeks, there's a lot of vitriol, even the political stance that you take. I mean, if you're a person that doesn't like Trump, you immediately open yourself up to the stupidest comments on the planet. And I just want to know how you deal with that. If you ever take it with you, if you ever are going to bed with all that shit, people's opinions of you.
No, I mean, I wish I had this answer because I want every woman to feel this way and not to care so much about what others think. I think that's the biggest issue is that we care so much and we look around and compare and compete. And like, I wish it was an injection, you know, of confidence, of self-assuredness. Whatever decisions I make for myself, I'm not worried about what other people are thinking about it. Like that left me, I don't even know if I ever really had that, like in elementary school and middle school and high school and those times where you're not fully formed. But once I became fully formed, like I am super confident in the decisions I make. And I know that your attitude is 100% of the equation. If you have a shitty attitude, when the things don't go your way, then they go real downhill fast. And if you have a great attitude when things don't go your way, they don't go downhill fast. It's just something that didn't go your way. And that's one instance. And you pick yourself back up with the right attitude and you get yourself back on track. So I don't deliberate. Like I don't have a hard time making decisions. I'm very decisive. I know what I'm doing. If I'm writing a book, I'm like, I've got an idea. I have a vision. I'm going to do it. If someone doesn't like it, then they can just talk to me when it's over and we'll discuss it. And this isn't something that I've always had, like a great positive attitude, but like, I don't allow myself to get overwhelmed with the commitments that I've chosen to make in my career. I don't want to be the person that goes, I have to go to this event and I have to make a speech, blah, 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 blah. I'm grateful they want me to make a speech. I'm grateful that they're appreciative and I'm grateful that I have the capability to make a speech and to go up there and be funny. So I've spent the last like 10 years of my life after I went to like real therapy, just reframing everything I do. And that way, my attitude, it takes precedence over everything. Like it is the thing that informs everything I do. So when I get on stage, I am spreading joy and I want people sitting next to strangers to feel a togetherness that you feel when you're laughing next to a stranger. And I try to take that into everything I do, you know, and you can't obviously have a great attitude 24 hours a day, but you can sure as hell try.
Absolutely.
And it makes a huge difference.
It does make a huge difference. Well, just sitting in the audience at the show that I just saw on the new tour, I was telling you a little bit that night when I saw you backstage about these four women that were sitting behind me. The joy that they were experiencing was actually pissing off the people around them because they kept repeating every joke that you said. So you would say a line and your show's quick. Like even when you're laughing, you're like, I got to stop fucking laughing because I'm going to miss this next thing. So there's a real control that has to go on watching you. It's like, oh my God, what's going to happen? I got to make sure I'm listening. These girls were repeating everything. Then they were adding their own take on it. But what my takeaway was just that the absolute joy that these people left. And you see everyone funnel in. You don't get to see that in the lobby. Everyone, the anticipation of the drinks. And then you do the show. And as you're walking out, the energy is so palpable. But when I was leaving in that group of people afterwards, I just felt like this is like a drug. And you're right. What the arts does, what creativity does, what laughter does. And people start thinking about their lives differently. So what you're doing, it's just important. And I'm not trying to kiss your ass. I felt kind of high when I left because, and I don't do edibles. I'm as sober as a goddamn judge.
And our Jan is very sober.
Yeah.
I know. Jan is very sober. It's quite disappointing, frankly, but.
You would have hated me drunk. I would have been the person that you would have been asking security to remove
me. Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine.
No, these guys keep me young because I'm always, we talked about drugs like 2 weeks ago and all their really weird experiences with mushrooms. But I know, Caitlin, you wanted to ask Chelsea about ayahuasca and I want to know that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, go.
This is a great segue. Well, I've had a bunch of friends actually go to Peru to do ayahuasca, and they have said that it, you know, really changed their outlook on their life. And they were obviously going down there with the intention of, you know, therapeutic purposes. So,
and getting diarrhea, because that's what happens when you do ayahuasca. Although I'm the only person that did not get diarrhea.
I would just like to
go on the record and say, listen, you're probably going to purge, meaning vomit. And you're probably going to, you know, a lot of people shit their pants. And I was like, I'm not a beginner. I am very, very well associated with all drugs, and I'm not going to ruin a good buzz by having diarrhea. So just get that out of your head. And guess who didn't get diarrhea? This girl.
You're the only one on Chelsea Does who didn't like either shit or barf into a bucket, which was really something.
I did barf once, but that was okay. It wasn't even like, it was just instant and then it was over. I was like, oh, okay, well, whatever.
So when you did it, did you have this like big changing experience, and did you go into it seeking something, or were you just kind of like, I'm interested in what this is like because I'm kind of that person? Or
I think I just want to, like when I do drugs or I do anything hallucinogenic, I just always try to remain open. You know, like just be, don't be nervous. If you're scared, that kind of will infuse your experience or influence your experience. And I'm not a scared person when it comes to drugs. I like it. And if I don't like something, I won't do it again, you know, but I went in just open, like thinking it would be about my mom who had passed away or my brother who had passed away when I was a little girl. But it ended up being so much more about my sister, one of my sisters, and our relationship. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, you can watch it. There's a series called Chelsea Does Drugs on Netflix. And it did change my life. It changed my relationship with my sister forever because it just highlighted all of our experiences from being little girls on the beach in Martha's Vineyard, like running through the sand, playing with each other. It was like an iPod shuffle of scenes from your childhood that were true. Like the bathing suit she was wearing was her bathing suit. The bathing suit I was wearing, the dog we had was the dog we had. Like all of it was just repressed, you know, or somewhere in the back of my brain. And I hadn't accessed those memories. And it was a reminder, like this female voice was saying to me, like, you've held hands more with this person in your life than you've held hands with anyone. This is a bond that you have to honor. Your sister's not like you. You have to be kinder and more gentle to her. And I was like, oh, like it wasn't what I was expecting at all, but I'm a good student. So I took that and I was like, okay, I'm going to change. And I did. And I didn't tell my sister what happened because I was like, oh, I'm not apologizing to her. But when she saw the documentary on Netflix, she called me. She's like, oh my God. She's like, Sissy, you have been so different for the last 6 months. Like, I can't believe that you didn't tell me about this. She's like, you have been so much nicer to me and so much more understanding. And I was like, well, that's why.
Drugs are good.
Sisters are complicated.
They are, but you know, my sisters really aren't. I'm the most complicated one, probably.
Yes, you are.
We're very close and we're very tight and we love each other. Like, there's no fighting. We don't fight.
You obviously have really great priorities because I don't know much about you. Obviously, I've met you for 8 seconds a couple of times, but I've spent the last 40 years of my life meeting people, thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And you know, from being around human beings, what the authenticity is, because you have done ayahuasca on a goddamn mountaintop and you've dealt with death and you've dealt with hard things. And I think a lot of people skip over the obstacles that successful people have to go through in order to get to where they're going. Not everything is a win.
No, no.
That's where we find our character is in the things that we don't get right.
Yeah, it's like finding gratitude in the dark. You know what I mean? It's like, listen, if we don't fall, it's trite to say, but it's so true. I've fallen on my face a million times. And thank God, you know, thank God I did, because it keeps you grounded and it makes you better. You get better. Every time you fail, when you get up, you are a better person. You are stronger. You're more grounded and you're calmer because you understand that I can survive anything. I'm 49 years old and I've gotten all of these things because of me, you know. I mean, I've had help along the way, obviously, but I got myself here. So once you realize that about yourself to whoever you are, you've gotten through all of these things and you're still here and you're still going, you start to go, wow, I am dependable. I am reliable. These are the things that I've always wanted to be. And here I am.
It's amazing how you can monetize being yourself. It always seems like the weirdest concept on the planet. You know, people always ask me about, you know, don't you write music, you know, for other people? And I'm like, God, no. That was half of the reason that I never really got anywhere in the United States, is because after Insensitive in like 1990 fucking six, it was like 30 years ago or something, they wanted another one of those. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I was prepared to die on that mountain, and I'm really not even making it up. I didn't want to do what everybody else was doing. I was just determined to be myself, and it worked out okay. But you've monetized just being yourself. Like, intellectual property is so amazing. To have an idea, put it in a book, put it in a television special, you know, put it into Chelsea Lately, which was a triumph, I might add. The girls and I were talking about this week. You were the only female late night talk show. Before we let you go, I want to know what that experience was like, because I know you're about to produce another television show, which we're going to talk about, but we're going to take a really quick break. Don't go away. We're going to be right back with Chelsea Handler right after a little message from our sponsors. Chelsea Lately was a triumph.
Thank you.
You had so many great guests, and you nailed it every night by being yourself, and people were generally nervous when they sat in a chair across from you.
Yeah, I had no idea how many people were so scared of me.
Scared shitless.
Because, I mean, people still say that. They're like, you're so intimidating. I'm like, I'm not intimidating. I'm like, it's so sad on one side of it that confidence is intimidating. Like, a female who's confident intimidates other people. Like, we should want all of our women to be confident. You know, I'm not faking my confidence. It's innate. And I've lost it at times in my life, and I've had to recultivate it. But it was a triumph. It was a huge, fun, crazy experience that I loved. And it was like going to college. Like, our offices were ridiculous. We got up to such nonsense. I mean, if we did that today, we would all be fired. You know, human resources would not. I mean, they used to call us human resources, and I would fuck with them so badly. I would be like, I just got so much joy out of taking the piss out of all the, like, the corporate people who took themselves so seriously. Like, yeah, I take my life seriously. I take my job seriously, but I don't take myself seriously. Like, I don't care if I look stupid, and I don't care if somebody makes fun of me.
You don't look stupid ever.
Well,
and you're smart, and that's the thing.
I have looked stupid. Listen, nobody has never looked stupid. So that's not fair to say, because obviously I've looked stupid. I just don't let that define me. Like, good. I'm a human being. I can be stupid sometimes. Sometimes I ask really stupid questions and they fly out of my mouth and I'm like, like, why did I just say that? But also, I have to be able to laugh at myself, right? I have a great sense of humor about myself and about the world. So that's helpful. And so that was a great experience. I loved doing that show. And then, you know, after 7 years, I was like, I'm done. I'm tired. This is silly. I don't want to make fun of people for the rest of my life. And I want to do something else. And I was like thirsty for a little bit more knowledge.
I think it's been a good balance, though. Like you said, the Netflix specials that you've done, you know, the whole thing about white privilege and things like that. Yeah, there was some jokes, but there was some really gut-wrenching, hard lessons and things that were kind of like a come to Moses moments for you, where you were like, okay, I've been put in my place a little bit here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's some discomfort here.
Yeah.
And that was actually really liberating to watch, because you knew very quickly it wasn't fucking fun and games the whole time. You were there to learn some stuff, be a better version of yourself, and educate whoever else was going to watch this stuff. And I think we did learn.
Well, thank you. I mean, that was my intent. You know, after doing something like Chelsea Lately for 7 years, I really had such a strong desire to be more, you know, serious about stuff, not only serious, but to learn and to grow and evolve. Like any of us, we all want to learn and grow. I mean, I'm not trying to stay the same. I'm trying to get better always, you know, more knowledgeable, more empathetic, more understanding, less reactive. So all of the experiences I have, yeah, they have been like across the board, you know, very different. And I'm grateful for that as well. And, you know, now I'm in a situation where I work when I want to work, and I, you know, I get to be in Whistler 3 to 4 months a year skiing, which is my greatest joy. and I get to, you know, tour or write my books or do my podcasts.
It's hard work traveling.
It is hard work traveling.
It is hard work moving a body around. So don't think for a second that it's easy because you are away from, you know, the people that you love. I don't think your dogs can come with you all the time.
No, they can't.
And it is tough. You're out there, you're sleeping in a hotel room. And as much as people think that's really glamorous, it's not. It's a hotel room.
It's a lot of tediousness. You know, you're the planes, the sickness, just traveling from time zone to time zone is tedious. Yeah, it's all gross, you know, like it's not, even if you're flying privately, it's still gross and tiring, you know, it doesn't matter. But again, that's an attitude, you know, I know what I need to do. I know that if I conserve, I have to conserve my energy if I'm going to do a show in front of 3,000 people or 4,000 people or 1,000 people, whatever it is, I know that I'm there for them. People save money to watch me and I'm going to deliver. So like my responsibility is to my audience. Whereas before I would be like, oh, I have another show tonight. Like when I was in my 30s, I had burned the candle at so many ends that I just had not, I was so depleted that I resented everything. I was like, can't do this. I can't do that. Instead of feeling grateful for having the opportunities to do all of it.
Imagine even 60, 70 years ago, a single woman doing things on her own terms, having houses, doing exactly, working when you want to work. Like it's just an unthinkable thing. Like my mom used to say that to me. Well, Dad said that you made more money last year than he did in his whole life pouring concrete. And I burst out crying because I just was so humbled by her saying that. Can you imagine, Jan, you're living in your own house and no one handed you anything? Had my mom been alive, she would have absolutely loved you. And I knew that she watched your show once in a while. She liked you and she liked Bill Riley. Fuck, sorry, forgive me. But
two peas in a pod.
It was just something going on there. But I love how you drag your family into your act, and we're going to let you go. But Sarah, I know you wanted to talk about comedy and what the edges of comedy were, and it was your question. And I thought it was great about just what the limits are. And yeah.
You know, there is a line, obviously, where like, I'm sure in the public spotlight, it's always like, well, at what point do you get canceled, right? Like, how far can you go? But when it comes to like putting a burnout there, I mean, the Tucker Carlson stuff made me laugh so freaking hard. You're so calculated with the burns. So I'm just wondering what's like your proudest moment in the spotlight and if there is a burn attached to the moment.
Well, what are my proudest moments? that's funny. I do like to give it to people, you know, like that. Piers Morgan, Tucker Carlson, those fucking idiots, Ben Shapiro, you know, they deserve it. The way they talk about women is reprehensible. And I feel a very large responsibility that I've put on myself to always exploit the life that I lead because it is possible and women should have agency. And I want every woman to know that you are not defined by who you get married to or how many children you have or blah, blah, blah. Like there is so much love and joy to be found in this world independent of those things. And so I don't feel like that group of people gets enough support because I get so much feedback from those women, you know, when I do anything of the things I do going, oh my God, like, thank you for talking about women who don't want to have children, that it's not for you. Like, that's actually, I'm doing everyone a favor by not having a child. You know what I mean? Because I wouldn't be good at it. And if I did have a child, she would be just like me and would be torturing all these men anyway. So what are they complaining about?
And you, she'd be torturing you as well.
Yeah, exactly. I would have divorced her by now. But I do enjoy, yes, of course, I do. I don't know which one my proudest. I mean, I loved going off on Piers Morgan on his show, telling him he was a terrible interview. That was a proud moment for me. Tucker Carlson, same thing. You know, like men who come after me, like, watch out because I'm going to make a fool out of you. And I have no doubt in my ability to do so. So come and get me, you know. And that's how I feel. I feel like I'm not just defending myself. I'm defending all of these other women.
Oh, absolutely. And you're a bitch and you are a twat and you are fucking this and that. It's so amazing what the language is that surrounds women that have an opinion, that have integrity, that have intelligence. The verbiage is even different. And it's even different with other women that they're not always supporting each other. I never had trouble with men coming up in the music business, but I sure had trouble with women.
I know. I had the same experience in stand-up. Same thing. Women would be cock-blocking me all the time.
It was a really bizarre experience. Anyway, you got a lot of things coming up here. The March 29th and the 30th. You sold the 29th out in about a hot minute. You're at the Queen Elizabeth Theater in Vancouver. Those are your two Canadian shows. I can't even look at your schedule because it makes my nipples twist off. It really does. Oh. The YouTube Theater, you're doing a Netflix fest in May with three gays, a Mexican, and a Jew. I'm assuming you're the Mexican. So
I am. I'm actually all three Mexicans.
Thank you. You're all three Mexicans. Well, a little bit about that. That's coming up. Obviously, you're producing it. And is it just a comedy special stand? Not just. It's obviously going to be hilarious.
It's just like a Netflix is a joke. It's like a night of, you know, they gave me a night and I filled it up with some funny people to do a show. And yeah. And you can catch Dear Chelsea every week. I do my podcast every week, which is also a great joy. And I love
that. We're fans. We loved Monica Lewinsky. Kristen Hanna was fantastic.
Yeah. I love Kristen Hanna. Have you read any of her books?
Yes. She rips my heart out. I just read The Four Winds. I was a little behind with Kristen, but I was just riveted. I read those books in like a day and a half and my eyeballs are going to drop out because I can't put it down.
Yeah, I know. She's so good.
And you're a big reader. I mean, the fact that one of your favorite books is The Fountainhead, this is a terrible comparison, but my brother who was in jail for murder for 28 years, his favorite book was also The Fountainhead. You share that with him.
Oh, wow. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, I'd be remiss to not tell you that while we still had you here.
Would it be okay for you to give him my number?
You know what? I did give it to him, and you should be hearing from him.
Oh, okay, Mike, because I just got a text, so that's probably him. He uses an eggplant emoji. Is that your brother?
It's his birthday today. He's 65 today, the poor guy. He's still in a halfway house.
Oh, and, poor guy.
But anyway, huge reader. We could talk to you about a million things, but I want to thank you a millionfold for your time.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure, Jan.
We're going to be cheering you on and laughing our asses off. I think you are an amazing force. And as uncomfortable as you have made me, you've also made me laugh so much over the years. And I'm always, I don't know you, but I'm proud of you from the point of being a fellow creator and just watching you go. And there's a lot of inspiration in that, watching another woman stand up for what she thinks is right and just and fair. And you take the heat and you do it with a lot of grace. Oh, so
well, thank you so much. Those are such kind words and I really appreciate them coming from you.
Thanks for your time. And I'm sure we'll run into each other again and look after yourself out there. Maybe the three of us should go see her in Hawaii, guys.
Let's go on vacation together. Bring your brother.
The little big bitch is going to Honolulu. So anyway, travel safe. But our guest has been Chelsea Handler. And she's fucking awesome. So go see her little big bitch tour and buy her books. And she's got a new book in the pipeline. And one more fun fact, Chelsea Handler. I joined Rhea for 10 seconds. My friend Danny Kind, who's a Canadian actress, talked me into it one day over a cup of tea, as you do. So I filled this thing out for 5 hours. 6 months later, I get accepted into this thing that I'd forgotten about. And I'm like, oh my Christ. In 1 week, we're going to be sending you the choices that Rhea has made for you. And I was just like, okay, ding. I was scared to open the app. You will laugh at this and don't ask me why. It was you, Drew Barrymore, Feist, the singer, and the fucking cop from Stranger Things. I love you so much, but I deleted the app that afternoon because I thought, this is insane. That is fucking insane. And Leslie Feist, I texted her and she goes, oh, you outed me. Yeah. I said, well, I love you, Leslie. But anyway, so there's a fun fact. And now we're done.
Okay. Well, I love that. I love it.
Thank you. And now we're truly done.
And it's also called Raya.
Keep kicking ass. I don't even know how we managed to have her come on the podcast. I mean, we're fantastic people, but she's busy. She's got books. She's got a couple of TV shows that she's developing. She's, you know, this tour takes her right into the summer. She's added so many more shows.
You know why? It's because you're not creepy when you meet her backstage. So thanks. That's why.
That's because I wasn't drunk.
Yeah, you didn't touch her butt. You kept it professional. And that's why we managed to get her on the podcast. And I mean, people call other people inspiring all the time and it can come across as being kind of like glib, but I really do feel that she's someone who, especially at the stage and age of her life that she's at, her season that she's in, it's just so cool to hear her talk to you a lot about the confidence that she has, and really like going for it and falling flat on your face, but working hard and having confidence and then losing it, but then cultivating it again. And she isn't saying it to be, to give platitudes or to, you know, be like some sort of handwritten scripted quote on a piece of driftwood. She means it. And you can tell that she lives her life in a different way from the majority of other people. And she has kind of always done that. So I, it's just, what a treat. What a treat to have her on and have her talking to you. Jan, you could, I've seen your shows. You have stand up in you. Like there's like, you're like, oh, I always try to be funny in my shows, but like,
it's half music, half stand-up, let's be honest.
And, but also like to have a big lull coming out of Insensitive or like Good Mother where everyone's just been crying is like, it's really something. It's a lot. It's a skill.
Well, it's storytelling.
Do you feel like it's making you think about how you're going to handle what you're doing with Rick on the road?
Well, Rick and I had four shows leading up to Christmas that are certainly precursors to the tour that we're about to embark on in April. But Rick is such a consummate setup man. And I think we both understand the value of setting each other up to go into these next segments. Like I never know what he's going to say. He remembers things very differently from me. And we, even in the four shows that we did, there was very few similarities in how he approached the show. And I would just look at him, okay, now you're making shit up because I don't remember that, but I'll call him on it. I'm like, I did not do that. I had my shirt on. Well, no, the snake, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, storytelling always has a bit of dramatization. There's always a good storyteller will always have that hushed moment when there'll be a few little superlatives that's a little different from the story. And I think Chelsea definitely has a knack for that, to take the story and make it into something magical. Mm-hmm. You just think this can't be real. And it is real. She's right. Her life, real life is much weirder than anything you could make up.
I know. I think we also, spoiler alert, as a show, collectively, we may have to go to Peru.
Or Hawaii. We made so many plans.
You know, if you haven't seen the show, like we said, the 29th and the 30th, I think the 29th is sold out at the Queen Elizabeth Theater in Vancouver, but the second show that they added on the 30th, go see it.
Link in the show notes.
And she does recognize that. She's like, people saved up their money to come see me. And she knows that. And there's a lot of value for what you see. It's probably an 80 or 90 minute show, which is huge for stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those stand-up shows, some of those people go in, they give you like 50 minutes and they're out.
You leave with abs. She's so funny. You will get a workout.
Well, I leave with an ab. I have the one ab.
Just one.
Yeah.
But I'm proud of you guys. We here we are in episode, what is this, 5 or 6?
6.
So yeah, everything else is okay in your worlds. We're moving along. Is there any updates that we need to know? I would be remiss if I didn't have Caitlin fill you in on, first, her son was so sick last week with a gastrointestinal thing that he got from daycare.
As a matter of fact, at the end of last week, she said, hopefully I don't get the bug, remember?
So pick it up from there, Caitlin.
I did get the bug, spoiler alert. I got it. I got it when I went to New York. I got it within 24 hours of arriving in New York. It is now the $3,000 stomach virus because I was bedridden. And
so you didn't see shit in New York. You didn't do anything.
Oh, I mean, I saw shit in New York.
Oh, you saw shit.
I was so sick, biblically medieval level sick, like considered reporting myself to the public health authorities because I was like, am I going to be the epicenter of a new plague? And instead, I saw my doctor when I got back here and she's like, no, you probably just had Norwalk. But I've lost 10 pounds in a matter of days.
Nuts.
Which is no small feat. And I fully hallucinated. And the only thing that saved me while I was stuck in this New York hotel room for 72 hours straight is that there happened to be a nonstop marathon of Vanderpump Rules on Bravo Television. And it was all that got me through because when I would pass out and come to, there my friends were still on TV. So
Kyle didn't get it?
Kyle didn't get it. I don't know what this man is made of. I don't know what. Thank God, though, because a New York City hotel room bathroom is not going to allow for two people to have this bug. Like you have
absolutely
no,
not.
There's no space.
Where'd you stay? Brooklyn or?
We were in Manhattan. We were in Soho.
Okay.
And it was beautiful. The weather was beautiful. It was St. Patrick's Day weekend. People are having drinks and carrying on. Like it was just great. The only thing I managed to do was we had one dinner, which was fabulous on the Friday night when we got there, some drinks.
Before it hit.
Then I had the dinner again.
Horrible feeling. You do think you're going to die. Like, it crosses your mind. You're thinking, is it my heart seems to be pounding really hard. And when you're pooing and throwing up at the same time, and hotels are always precarious because you either have to make a choice to shit in the bathtub or shit in the toilet and throw up in the bathtub. Like, you have to make choices, and then you have to clean it up. So you're so sick, and you're trying to get like the sprayer. If they have a sprayer, sometimes you're using the little cup that they provide you by the sink to wash down whatever is in the bathtub, because they're never laid out properly. And sometimes the toilet is in a separate room. All I'm saying is it's terrible to be sick.
Jan, have I triggered
room.
Some memories for you?
terrible to be sick. It's lonesome. Jeez. It's depressing.
Yes, that's it. I will say, like my mental health is only now starting to recover a little bit. I booked an extra therapy session because I'm like, I am stressed. I feel very ripped off that I needed this trip and this break. And I got the absolute opposite. And the only thing that has kept me together mentally is knowing that we had Chelsea Handler on the pod this week. I was like, that's it. If nothing else, I'm going to be svelte AF for this interview with Chelsea Handler. And it kept me going thinking about this recording session today, guys. So one day I'll go back to New York when I somehow have money again.
Now, stay tuned for the end of this episode, because Sarah is going to play you at least two of the voice notes, the voicemails. Okay, Sarah, I'll defer to you. Like, who are we talking to at the end of the program?
We are going to hear from Lana.
Okay.
From California, Deb from Goderich, Carrie. Oh, listen to this. We'll start with Carrie. Carrie has a follow-up on the In-N-Out Burger conversation.
Okay.
Hi there. My name's Carrie. I was listening to your episode yesterday on soft thoughtfulness. And then this morning I woke up and heard somebody writing a song about In-N-Out Burger. He's on American Idol this year. I sent it to Jan on Instagram. I don't know if she'll get it, so I thought I'd leave a note here. CJ is Love is his name. I thought you guys would get a kick out of it. He said a friend of his who is Canadian is down there experiencing In-N-Out Burger for the first time. So anyway, enjoy your podcast, and yeah, I'll be listening.
Good morning from Goderich, Ontario. This is Deb. It is the first day of spring, and Mother Nature is definitely reminding us she's still in charge. So this is take 200, trying to do this voice message for you ladies. I just wanted to say, I absolutely love your podcast. Mostly I listen to it at the gym, so I get to laugh out loud, and all the members know who I'm listening to. I love the tips, the news of our crazy wild world, the banter and the honesty you ladies bring to this. You keep it real. Keep on doing what you're doing. The laughter, the joy. Have yourself a great day.
Hello, Jan, Caitlin, and Sarah. I listen to the podcast weekly, and I love my dose of Canadian. My husband and my cat and I moved from Vancouver to Southern California for his work a little over a year ago, and you bring me great joy. Thank you for all that you do. Have a great day.
Hi, Sarah, Caitlin, and Jan. This is Mattia from Prince George, British Columbia. I have to admit, I was a little bit nervous about leaving a voicemail, or a voice message, but I know that the real deal times three would say, no, don't be, because that's the whole idea of this. Reaching out to everybody and keep sharing all the wonderful news. Today I'm not going to ask any questions. I just want to give gratitude to all three of you for always, when I take you on my runs, usually on Saturday. You know, sometimes I'm like, oh, it gives me the courage to ask for forgiveness from someone or forgive somebody or make a change or be the change or anyways, all those lovely things. And I just want to thank you, all three of you, for that. Happiness and joy and all those wonderful things to all of you. Thank you.
Anyway, hit that little red thing.
It's a microphone.
You've been listening to the Jan Arden Podcast and Show. We'll see you next time. Toodly-doo.
This podcast is distributed by the Women in Media Podcast Network. Find out more at womeninmedia.network.